Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Roughly 900 structures, homes, businesses, infrastructure on Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket may experience daily flooding from tides by 2050. And erosion could claim 800 structures and 44 miles of road across both islands. These are just two of the findings from this year's State of the Coast report by the nonprofit Trustees of Reservations, the largest private coastal landowner in Massachusetts. This year's report details the climate crisis with a focus on predominantly Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. And not to oversimplify, but the report basically says things are bad and the solutions are limited. Joining us now, Tom O'Shea, Managing Director of Resources and Planning for the Trustees of Reservations and one of the report's authors. Tom, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So, Tom, is that a fair summary? Things are bad and the solutions are limited?
Well, the solutions certainly get limited if we don't act within the next 5, 10, 20 years, because by 2050, exponential change in sea level rise and storm surge. So I think this is the time to think about what we can do and what our options are, because they certainly will become more limited. You know, I would say that right now, things in terms of being bad, we've seen and are already witnessing impacts, right? Whether it's just the weather patterns, the fires that we've seen and heard about, floods, but we're seeing along the coast, the fragile coast has been changing significantly just in the last five years and even the last few decades. So this is only going to continue. So the bad gets worse, right? And so I think we really have the time now to make a difference.
So Tom, we are coordinating with you on the fly. I know you're down in the area and we've got sort of limited cell service down there. I had wanted to ask you to read a short passage from the report. Do you have that passage with you?
I do.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to set it up for our listeners. I'm going to ask you to read a passage from page 24 of the report, the introduction to the section on developed coastlines. And I asked for it because I feel like it offers kind of a microcosm of the drumbeat of the report. Go ahead and read it.
Okay. Accelerating forces of melting ice, warming oceans, and higher seas may not impact us as gradually as we once thought. In some areas, today's flood zones are forecast to be tomorrow's high tide zones, threatening road access to harbors, hospitals, airports, and downtown commercial areas. Fishing vessels and ferries, providing vital connections to and from the mainland and between island outposts, may face inundated and/or storm-damaged docks. Utility and communication infrastructure may be damaged or interrupted, and residents who rely on private wells may lose access to clean water due to saltwater intrusion.
So that's Tom O'Shea there reading from this year's State of the Coast report. Tom, do people grasp the potential severity of the situation here? You know, utilities, communication infrastructure, access to medical care, well water, these are potentially catastrophic outcomes.
Yeah, I think it's mixed. You know, I know that a lot of the communities on the islands are aware of these challenges and threats, but I'm not sure that that's broadly recognized and acknowledged by homeowners and businesses and residents. Some have seen storms come and go, but, you know, on any calm day, as I said in the report, you wouldn't know that these things are coming. And so you may not feel the urgency to make choices today. And that's what we really need to do, is start making choices today before they become catastrophic. And, you know, this is not new to the islands. They've seen the coast change for decades. It's just the pace of that change and some of the pinch points that we really need to pay attention to. And that's what we tried to call out, even in this passage, right? Those ways that we really would be impacted. And there are things we need to do now, because projects take years to develop and to put into action.
Yeah, let's start talking about that. 44 pages of report, a lot of specific recommendations. You just referred to hard choices that need to be made now. Can you kind of give us the themes or the headlines of what those choices are, Tom?
Yeah, the choices, I mean, and we've seen that some people have tried to respond by doing some sort of protection, right? We're going to put up a seawall. Maybe we'll have some barrier in front of our coastal real estate. And those kind of protection, you know, we can sort of resist and push against the ocean. I think now it's getting to the point where we're going to have to make questions about, you know, face choices about adaptations. Can we elevate? Can we redesign, you know, our structures, elevate our roads? Can we, you know, think about moving back from the ocean? And that is going to be even a harder conversation and choice for people, is to think about relocating. And but, you know, that coast is on the move. So people certainly have to face that choice who live close to the shoreline. And, you know, I think it's time to start thinking about how do we naturalize our coast as well, so that we're getting people in the development out of harm's way, or in some cases, having nature help protect and make our areas more resilient on the coast where we live and work.
Tom, define that.
I think there's a lot of trade-offs because you can't. Yeah.
Well, just define that term for us a little bit. What do you mean by naturalizing the coast?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's thinking about how our salt marshes, our beaches, and areas that right now provide protection and buffers from storm surge, you know, minimize wave action and flooding, or are just by nature, right? They're not developed, and so they're not like they can handle and heal and respond to change. That's what they've done. That's what they've sort of evolved to deal with as systems. Whereas, you know, a seawall, when it breaks, you've got to repair it. You have to renew it. If it's a house, it gets damaged, you know, you have to repair it. And in some cases, the house could fall into the sea, right? Roads need to be rebuilt. And so, you know, the more natural coastline you have, the more resilient it is just by nature that it can respond and heal itself. So are there ways that we can, you know, incorporate and think about nature-based solutions, which is a term you may or may not have heard about, which is using nature as part of your infrastructure, and, you know, ways to help buffer the impacts of coastal change.
So I want to pick up another thread you mentioned. You talked about people having to move, right? Move physical buildings, houses, relocate. One of the solutions you talk about is that, but you also say that there's a really small amount of remaining land on Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket that are available for development. So where do people move to, and how do we solve for that problem?
Yeah, that will be a challenge for sure, is to start thinking about what are the relocation possibilities, and at the same time thinking about how do we make more resilient areas. I mean, I've talked about coastal corridors, that these are the areas where they're going to be impacted maybe, you know, through tidal flooding or storm events that are going to cause damage. So those zones are the ones that need to start thinking about what their choices are, either adapt in place or move inland. And like you said, there are going to be limited development opportunities in these islands for doing that type of movement. Some people have properties where they can actually shift rearward in the land or parcel that they own, but in many cases they can't, right? So it's better to talk and have those conversations now than wait till the damage is on our doorstep.
So,
you know, I think it's going to be a question, obviously, of what do we do with the conservation land we have now, right? Which was protected and has become a really important piece of conservation on these islands as it is today. So I don't know. I think it's time to really start thinking about where people need to move, when they need to move, and where, you know, and what are those relocation options.
So Tom, just very briefly, have you run the numbers? Do you know how much we stand to lose in dollars if we don't do those things, and what the costs of the solution sets you're laying out are? Do we know those rough numbers?
No, we don't. I mean, we look at some of the potential damage just to the value of parcels on the islands, and I think we were up in the $4.6 billion figure of areas that could be impacted by flooding and erosion. That's probably a conservative estimate. It could be much greater than that. We didn't look at all the public infrastructure and you know, rebuilding roads and hospitals. And so, you know, this was just looking at coastal real estate values that could be impacted. So, okay. I mean, it's a big figure, but if you spread out that over time and think about, well, how do we, you know, make those investments and those decisions today over the next 30 years, then it seems more doable to address these risks. Otherwise, by the time you get to 2050, you know, your options have run out, as I mentioned, and the costs could be quite high.
All right, that's
in terms of damage and loss.
That's Tom O'Shea, Managing Director of Resources and Planning for the Trustees of Reservations and one of the authors of the South Shore Islands Climate Report. I know you're at the Long Point Wildlife Refuge in West Tisbury on the Vineyard today. Thanks for taking the time to join us, Tom.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.